Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the show today, we'll be talking about health and healthcare in the state of Illinois. And we have two guests. They're both economists, both interested in the economics of health. Our guests are Robert Kessner. He's professor of economics at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He is also faculty member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Also joining us is Anthony Lasasso. He is an associate professor and senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the U of I Chicago School of Public Health, and is also on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And they are two of the contributors to the Illinois Report for 2008. This is now the second edition of this report that the Institute has put out. And what they do is they look at Illinois in a variety of ways, talking about issues like the economy, healthcare, energy, infrastructure, poverty, education, and so forth. And we expect that between us here on Focus 580 and the Afternoon Magazine in the weeks ahead that we'll have a number of the contributors to this report on our programs to talk about these particular issues. And we're pleased that Professor Kessner and Professor Lasasso could be joining us this morning to talk about healthcare in the state of Illinois. If you're interested, by the way, in reading the report, you can get a copy from the Institute, or you can read it for free online if you just go to their website. Questions, of course, are welcome here on the show, as always. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so if you would be listening in Chicago, for example, or in Indiana, anywhere the signal travels, if you would like to call in, and it would be a long-distance call, use our toll-free line. And also, if you're listening on the internet, you can use that one too. That number is 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, Professor Kessner, hello.
Hi. Hi, David.
And Professor Lasasso.
Hi, David.
Thanks, both of you, for talking with us. We appreciate it. I think that probably we will be spending most of our time talking about things like access to health care, the cost, how much the state is spending, and certainly I want to talk about some of the proposals that the governor has made now over the past year or so to address the issue of the those people who don't have health coverage. But first, though, I'd like to begin talk a little bit about the state of Illinois and draw some comparisons between Illinois and other states, just to put it in some kind of context, as you do in the report. So let me ask this question. Are there some objective measures that you can use to compare the people of Illinois with the rest of the country and ask a question like, well, in terms of their general state of health, how are Illinoisans doing, and are they about as healthy as other Americans?
Yeah, I mean, for the report, what we did is we looked at data from across the country for all the 50 states and Illinois in particular, and we looked at a group of people who are 18 to 64, kind of the adult segment. We didn't focus on the elderly because the state elderly are covered by Medicare, which is a federal program, and while they're a very interesting group, it's not the state is not at such a financial burden for this group. But in general, Illinois is very similar to the average in the United States in terms of its health and use of health care services. People in Illinois report about the same level of good health as those in the rest of the country. About two-thirds of people in Illinois report that they're in good or excellent health, and that's about the same as in the rest of the country. And that figure really hasn't changed much over the last 10 years. People in Illinois, are about 75% of people in Illinois among this age group are covered by health insurance. And again, that's about equal to the national average. And over the last 10 years, that hasn't changed too much. One of the things that has changed dramatically in Illinois is the probability of being obese and weight. It's approximately doubled in the last 10 years, from 9% of the population to 18% of the 18 to 64 year old group. And again, that mirrors the figure in the rest of the country too. So In a lot of ways, Illinois is just about average relative to the rest of the nation, and on many measures, there hasn't been great change. The one thing that really stands out is the growth in obesity, rates of obesity.
Mm-hmm. So just again to touch on the issue of people who don't have insurance, because this is a significant, when it comes to health care, it's a significant issue, not just in Illinois, but it's a significant issue in the United States, and one that we should expect there will be considerable discussion of, and already has been, will be in the presidential campaign. Among this group that you look at, basically here we're talking about people in Illinois who are in their prime working years, these folks between 18 and 64, the percentage of this working this age group that is underinsured. Give us the number again, and I think if I heard you correctly, you said that the problem of the uninsured basically here in Illinois is about the same as it is for the rest of the country.
Right. The figure is about, I said it, one way, I said that 75% are covered, but the converse of that is 25% of this group do not have health insurance, which is a sizable share of that age range.
Okay. So we're talking about, of this group, roughly a quarter, 25%,
right,
do not have insurance.
That's correct.
Let's talk a little bit about what we spend on health care. Just and let's set aside how much the question of the state, how much the state spends, but generally how much we spend on health care in the state of Illinois. Is that about the same as anyplace else?
I think Illinois is about average in the rest of the country in terms of what it spends on health care. And that goes for the state, too. I don't think Illinois is an overly generous in terms of its public programs, although the governor clearly has proposed a very bold plan the last 2 years running. I think I'm most familiar with what the state spends, the state government spends. I think it's about $14 billion now on health care, on all its programs. So it's quite a large sum of money.
Right. And what specifically, where does that money go?
Well, most of it goes to the Medicaid and the SCHIP program. The Medicaid program is the subsidized health insurance for low-income families, and that absorbs about $12 billion or so. Of that, the state pays about $6 to $7 billion of that money, and the rest comes from the federal government. That's a matching program. For every dollar the state spends, the federal government matches that with a dollar, and then about $2.5 billion goes to providing health insurance for state employees. So, basically, one out of every four tax dollars in Illinois goes for health care spending.
Mm. And if you take a look at these areas, particularly the money that we're spending for Medicare and Medicaid, and perhaps also, I guess, you need to factor in the amount of money that we spend to provide health care for state employees and also for people who have been workers and who have retired, I'm sure that there are projections about what this is going to be like next year and the year after that and into the future. Are we expecting that this part of the state budget is going to have to go up, or that the amount of money that we're going to have to put into it is going to have to go up?
This is like every other state and the country as a whole. Healthcare spending is rising somewhere between 7 to 10% a year, and the state revenue is rising around 3% per year on average. So every year there's what the governor and people refer to as a structural imbalance, healthcare costs growing faster than incomes. So healthcare takes up an increasingly larger and larger share of resources. That's at the state and national level. And the real problem with that is that it crowds out spending on all other kinds of programs that are valuable. Mm-hmm. Education, infrastructure spending, unabated, healthcare will increasingly tend to dominate what the state spends its money on.
What sort of ideas have been put out to try to limit the increase in spending, or at least to get the most out of our healthcare dollar in the state of Illinois?
Well, you know, there's if there was a magic bullet out there, someone would have used it already. Even if you if we reflect on what the candidates at the, for the presidential election are talking about, everybody's talking about covering the uninsured and expanding spending. And then they I think it's fair to say mostly lip service is paid to reducing the cost and the growth in the cost of health care. And the reason for that is no one really has a good idea how to do it that's politically feasible. But here, I mean, we've recommended some things in the report. We know that managed care and using very narrow networks and bargaining with providers is one way to lower costs and reduce the cost of spending. So in Illinois, the Medicaid program for the low-income families doesn't really use what we call a kind of strict managed care approach that could be adopted, that could save money. We're not talking about extremely large sums, but it could spend save somewhere maybe 5% of total spending, but 5% of $7 billion is a lot of money, a lot of savings. In terms of the state employees' health insurance plan, right now the state provides very generous coverage for state employees, more generous than any large firm, say, in Illinois or the Midwest. And the state could cut back on the generosity of that that coverage and restructure it to provide incentives for employees to conserve on healthcare spending. I think Tony is very familiar, or Professor Lasasso is very familiar with this kind of consumer-driven health plan.
Well, yeah, David. So the other option, I mean, managed care is what you'd basically think of as affecting the supply side of healthcare,
mm-hmm.
and the other side of the equation is always the demand side. So, and the way to affect demand is to affect the price that the end user, the patient, is going to experience. So, one avenue, you know, is so-called high deductible policies, or sometimes called consumer directed health plans, and these are basically approaches to try to in a what I'll call kind of a sugar-coated sort of way, basically increase the cost sharing that that the patient's going to experience. And you know, you will notice though that, you know, when we talk about stricter managed care or higher out-of-pocket spending associated with healthcare, you know, these are, As Professor Kessner alluded to a moment ago, these are not exactly appealing options, but in many ways, these are the only realistic options if we're going to talk about actually reducing expenditures and on healthcare. And we can get into the issue of what the effects of these types of care management or demand side management of healthcare costs will have on health, which is of course the ultimate outcome that we care about, but you'll see though that the options, there's a reason why the candidates don't really want to talk about the cost growth, containment of the cost side of healthcare. It's one thing; it's very popular to talk about expanding coverage to those who don't have health insurance, but that really only leads to more costs, higher costs. Mm-hmm. More spending.
And obviously on the other side, that people don't like to hear about the possibility that then in the future they should expect to have less care.
Right.
Or that you would say to them, well, you know, if you would do something like quit smoking and lose some weight and get some regular exercise, that would not only would that be good for you as an individual, but it would make you healthier. And then that means that we would be potentially, at least, we'd be spending less on your health care, so it would cost less. So on the one hand, you would say, well, that's everybody wins that way. People are healthier and we spend less. But again, I think that's in it up there with the message that you're going to get less care, the idea that, well, what we want you to do is lose weight and go out and start running. Probably a lot of people aren't really going to respond all that well to that kind of message either.
Yeah. Again, there is no silver bullet. There's no easy way. There's no appealing way to do this. Yes, you can definitely talk about losing some weight, exercise. These are all costly activities in the sense that they take a lot of energy and effort to do these things. People would rather not do these things.
This brings up an interesting point. I mean, one of the most important health problems today in obesity in the country, in Illinois in the country, is obesity, and it's growing. Providing health insurance for people does nothing to address this problem. And the state spends, spends $14 billion on basically providing health insurance and healthcare services for people. It spends about 3% of that, a tiny fraction, on public health, on the Illinois Department of Public Health. And, the great advances in health in the 20th century in the U.S. has come from public health, things like getting people to quit smoking in the Surgeon General's report. And Illinois and all states and the country as a whole really underinvests in public health, things that can try to improve people's lifestyles and physical activity and obesity and diet. So that's a much harder thing to do than just say, let's cover everybody and provide more medical care.
Mm. I'd like to introduce again the guests with this part of Focus 580, Robert Kessner and Anthony Losasso. Robert Kessner is professor of economics at the University of Illinois Chicago and a faculty member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Anthony Losasso is associate professor and senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the U of I Chicago School of Public Health and is also on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And they are two of the three contributors to the section on health of this year's Illinois report for 2008 that's been put out by the Institute, looking at Illinois in a number of ways, looking at health, economy, infrastructure, poverty, education, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you'd like to read the report, you can get a copy from the Institute. You can also read it online if you go to their website. Questions are welcome, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have a caller in Champaign, and let's talk with them. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
In terms of the public health, is it that they've sort of starved these programs? In other words, they don't put the money into them. I know that the national level, a lot of EPA, all these other things, is that there's been a tendency that they don't have enough. OSHA doesn't have enough money. In the essence, they sort of starve these things. Is that what's going on there? In terms of money-wise.
Well, it's always a matter of, there's never enough money for everything. So,
well, that's true, but,
I think the state has, I think it's something that Professor Losasso was referring to. It's very hard to really identify effective programs to get people to change their diets, increase their physical activity, reduce smoking. I mean, there's nobody in the state of Illinois who doesn't know smoking is bad for you, but still about 25% of adults are current smokers. I think there's a real imbalance in spending between what the state spends on public health and what it spends on providing medical care for the sick. And that could be, I think there could be a reallocation of spending towards that public health.
There was also, in terms of funds, I can remember back when, Illinois won the case in terms of the smoking, and then they give everybody $100 or a couple hundred dollars back rather than put in the programs to continue. And I think California did a pretty good job with that, to get people to quit smoking, and especially the youth. But anyway, that's another. The model of managed care by the insurance companies really seems to me was not a good model. Is that true? Or, there was a lot of, because what happened?
Well, I'm having a little trouble hearing the caller, David,
yeah.
But...
Okay, managed care, by insurance companies didn't seem like a very good model in the past.
Right. I think what managed care does is it limits consumers' choice, and by limiting their choice of provider, allows the payer, the insurer, insurance company, or the employer, to bargain very effectively with the providers for lower prices. And it's unequivocal that was successful. in the mid-90s. But there was, along with that came consumer backlash, because one thing we love in the United States is choice, and consumers don't like getting their choices limited.
Yeah, but there's also a bit of greed on the part of insurance companies, too. But anyway, I'll sign off there.
Well, let me just – I have a couple of other callers here, but I'm really interested in this question of, can you use the right kind of blend of incentives and design a program that provides incentives to people to be healthy without it being so punitive that people are going to object. I guess I would think from a strictly economic point of view, you could construct something that says, okay, this is how much we're going to have your out-of-pocket expense for your health care. But if you quit smoking, we'll shave a little bit off there. And if you get near your ideal body weight, we'll shave a little bit more off. And if you could demonstrate you get regular exercise, we'll shave a little bit more off. And if your blood pressure is good, we'll shave. You know, so that what we're saying to you is essentially to be less healthy, it's going to cost you more. So why don't, not only do you, is it good to be healthy just for the sake of being healthy, but it's also an incentive because it means your out-of-pocket costs are going to be less.
Well, David, I mean, I think that's exactly the direction that I think a lot of employers and a lot of insurers want to move towards. They want to move in that direction of essentially charging higher premiums for modifiable health risks. And that's actually becoming closer to a possibility. It can be done. You can charge a differential premium, health insurance premium, if there is a bona fide wellness program present. And this is sort of happening now in a lot of states. They're moving and to allow this sort of thing to happen. And you know, so the question is, well, how effective will that sort of, well, I guess you can call it a punitive kind of approach, be towards getting people to invest in modifying their health behaviors, whether that's quitting smoking. I mean, the practice has to be accompanied with some type of wellness program, which would be, you know, smoking cessation, counseling, these sorts of things. And that's definitely a direction. The question is whether it winds up being kind of cost effective. Can you actually modify? Does it become more costly to get people to change their behaviors than to simply treat the disease later on down the road? And that's, I think, kind of an open question at this point.
Hmm. We have some other callers. Let's talk next with someone who is listening in Gibson City, and this is line two.
Yes. Hello.
Uh-huh.
I guess my question is, our culture and our advertising. I remember watching on TV some health person, and it was like, you know, advocating for healthy lifestyle, and then the commercial goes to a fast food commercial, and I just, you know, this whole thing of advertising and our, you know, our children want to go to the fast food place that has the newest toy from the latest movie, and I just want to get your opinion of that, how that influences us too as a culture. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you can take that on any way that you like.
I think we're both trained as economists, so we tend not to think that our preferences are driven by advertising, but that advertising is driven by our preferences. But I think a productive strategy that addresses the caller's point, and we can point to real success, is cigarette taxes, for example. So, a little more heavy-handed is banning of cigarette advertising, say, on TV and other outlets. But raising the price of cigarettes has been shown to be a very effective way to reduce consumption of cigarettes. So that could be that model could be applied to other areas. So, you know, we could tax fast food. There's nothing saying that we can't impose a special surcharge on fast food choices to raise the price. And people, you know, respond to prices. That's a known, well-documented fact. Exhortations by the government, on the other hand, haven't been shown to be very successful. But when people have to actually pay more, they do respond. So one thing, you know, we could move into a direction of charging differential prices or charging taxes on things that are adversely affecting our health, like, you know, fast food.
But it does, I mean, I guess I would just chime in that this does raise a kind of host of sticky questions. I mean, you know, in terms of carrying out such a policy, somebody then has to decide what,
right.
Some policymaker has to decide what is going to be the effectively demonized food or food groups or products, services and whatnot that are going to experience, you know, higher taxes. I mean, I guess we could all sort of get behind cigarettes as a bad and raise taxes, and that's been effective. We now see the smokers, the poor huddled smokers out there in the cold, shivering, you know, because they can't smoke inside. But you know, do we want to similarly set up these types of policies to you know, demonize Big Mac eaters or something like that? And so, you know, yes, Professor Kestner's right that certainly behavior responds to price, and so if you tax something, people will move away from it. But it's a little harder than to actually put into practice and say, well, what are we actually going to tax?
Yeah.
And will there be a black market for Big Macs?
The day that we have the Big Mac tax, I think we got a problem. Let's go to St. Joe. This is line 3 for another caller. Hello.
Yes, I guess I just wanted to know what the purpose of insurance companies is in the healthcare industry. It seems like we've regulated control over, you know, the entire health system up to the insurance industry. You know, they talk about they want your choices for healthcare to be between you and your doctor. Well, when you go to your doctor's office and you discuss what you're going to do, the first thing he does, or she, is to check and see what insurance you have, and it's going to dictate tests that you have, what medication you're on. It just seems like it's not the MD, it's the MBA. And whether or not you have insurance doesn't necessarily save you. You still, it seems like most of the people, most everybody I know has insurance, but they still are faced with sometimes ridiculous costs and bills, which you really have no control over. The health insurance industry has you. It's not like you can really go to another insurance company because they can decide whether or not to take you, how much to charge you. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, just as a matter of, I guess, first principles here, I mean, insurance and the insurance industry functions as really the essential and critical risk spreading kind of institution. I mean, it essentially bears the financial risk across, you know, a large number of consumers. I mean, we certainly value that function, and I guess there are lots of components to your question. I'll certainly let Professor Kestner answer as well. But I mean, the point I'll make though is that I think the role that insurance plays is a critical one, and I think we tend to lose sight of that when we kind of focus on these out of pocket payments that we might have to meet, but certainly, you know, those are comparatively small relative to when they pick up the tab for a catastrophic, although, you know, very rare, you know, happily. Rare events, but a catastrophic event that's going to result in, you know, basically, you know, perhaps, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, millions of dollars of cost that you'd never be able to meet, and that's sort of that's their primary function.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to add something here. I mean, there's and I think it's exacerbated by politicians' rhetoric also about the greedy insurance industry, and that's the big problem. Along with what Professor Lasasso said, that insurance is a very good thing to have, and we need insurance companies to spread that risk. 50% of all employees in Illinois or in the United States are in firms that self-insure. There is no insurance company. The firm itself is the insurance company. So there's no big greedy health insurance company behind that plan. It's the firm itself, the large employers that self-insure, that become their own insurance company. And then, you know, one thing that the Illinois report does, it really tries to be evidence-based, and not my opinion or Professor Lasasso's opinion, as best as possible. And so, for example, I mean, I think the caller described a very important thing. You go into your doctor's office, and depending on how the doctor is paid, the doctor responds. Now, the doctors are all well-intentioned, very well-meaning people, probably with higher moral standards than the average person. But they still respond to financial incentives. And one thing that has been shown clearly is that when the physician has an incentive to provide more care, they do. But that care has not necessarily been proven to be very valuable. There is absolutely no evidence that when managed care came in, limited consumer choice, bargained harder with providers to lower prices, that anybody's health was made worse off. That's just what the evidence states. So, you know, it's very important how the insurer pays the physician. Physicians do respond, and a lot of times because of uncertainty in medicine, and physicians have a lot of uncertainty about diagnosis and treatment, that there's a tendency, when given the option, to overuse care that is of limited value and of limited evidence to be valuable. So, you know, there's a view out there that the insurance companies are driving things. First, there's 50% of people covered by employer-sponsored health insurance are covered by the firm itself, not some, you know, large insurance firm. And second, all the evidence suggests that being careful about giving physicians and other hospitals the right incentives can lead to more efficient care.
We have a number of calls. We have about 20 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and I'd like to again introduce our guests. The last person you heard is Robert Kessner. He's professor of economics at the U of I Chicago and faculty member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Also joining us, Anthony Lasasso. He is associate professor and senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the U of I Chicago School of Public Health, and he's also on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. The Institute has put out a report they call the Illinois Report for 2008. This is now the second year that they have done this, and a number of different people have contributed sections looking at health care, but also economic and education and poverty and infrastructure issues. You can read it for free online if you go to the website of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Questions welcome. We try to get in as many people as we can in the time that's left. I want to get next on to somebody who is on a cell phone, and this is line number 4. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Well, I'm kind of disappointed that NPR would have two apologists for the insurance industry on when there's a lot of other views on this. The job of insurance companies is not to spread risk around. The job of insurance companies is to make profit, and they do that by eliminating risk to themselves by throwing all the people off that might actually have a large claim. And that's what's been going on here in huge numbers in the United States over the last 5 or 10 years, is people getting kicked off insurance companies and denied insurance. We are not getting choice from these insurance companies. If you want to see risk spread around, you have nationalized health care run by the government where everyone gets insured. Then the risk is truly spread around. There's plenty of ways to give incentives to doctors and medical providers to not charge exorbitant prices or do unnecessary procedures. But having insurance, 1 out of 5 medical dollars is insurance company profits. That's money that is not going to anybody's health care. It's going to giving these guys lavish lifestyles so they can live on private golf courses and build skyscrapers. It's not going to health care, and it never will as long as this is a for-profit operation.
Well, I'll pitch that one to Professor Lasasso, and then Professor Kessner, you can respond as well.
I guess I would just say that the evidence actually is extremely limited. I'm really not aware of any particular evidence showing that insurers are, quote, throwing people off in large numbers who have high claims experience. You know, there might be some anecdotes or something that the caller is aware of, but there's really no broader evidence of that. I mean, you don't have to really look very hard, actually, to see that insurers are playing. I mean, I guess if this makes me an apologist for the industry, I mean, I guess I just kind of think of insurance as a is truly one of the, I guess, one of the greatest inventions, if you will, of modern civilization. I mean, it allows us to, it comes naturally, it evolves naturally, it allows us as a society to spread risks across a large group of people. I mean, it's, you know, so, I mean, it, do our, is a, an insurance company that takes takes it upon itself to perform this function, does that merit it a profit? Well, I mean, you know, does a grocery store merit profit for, you know, bringing together large quantities of fruits and vegetables and other products? I mean, yes, I think the answer is we'd all agree that it would be, and so I think by the same token, health insurance companies are entitled to a profit. I'm not sure about the lavish lifestyle that the caller alluded to, but I'll let Professor...
Yeah, I mean, I'd just like to add, again, I think the what one of the most important things that the caller raised, there are alternative ways to spread risk instead of private insurance companies. I mean, other countries have different models, and that's fine. That's a valid point, that we could move to a nationalized type of medicine and where everybody's insured from birth on, and that clearly is a one way to spread risk. It has its advantages and disadvantages. So I think that's the positive point that the caller has raised. But, you know, just, again, on the evidence, you know, in the last 10 years, about 75% of people in Illinois and the United States have private insurance coverage. That number hasn't really changed much. So there's no evidence that people are being tossed off. Again, 50% of all employees covered by employer health insurance are covered by the firm itself, by, you know, large firm, Archer Daniel Midland. It's not some greedy insurance company with executives on the golf course that are providing it. The firm has every incentive to minimize what they spend on health insurance and without throwing profits to some, their own, you know, wasting money on their own. So I think the important point that the caller raises is there are alternative ways and that some of them are, you know, being discussed in the presidential election to providing insurance for everybody. There's alternative models out there across the world. But in terms of just, you know, what's going on in the United States, some of his characterizations are not quite correct.
We're here now, again, coming into about our last 10 minutes. Before we end up out of time, there is something that I do want to at least have you talk a little bit about, and that's what the governor has proposed, because it's probably the biggest thing that's come along in the last year or so, his proposals to provide coverage for people who don't have it. And again, going back to talking at the beginning of the program about the fact that if you look at people in their prime working ages, I think that was 18 to 64, you got 25% of those people in the state of Illinois who have no health insurance. So what the governor has proposed is a program that essentially would cover everyone, and he calls it Illinois Covered. And last year, it was not well received by the members of the General Assembly, not, I think, because they thought the goal wasn't good, but it was what he proposed to the funding mechanism, what he proposed to pay for it, that they didn't approve of. And now he's essentially continued to talk about doing the same thing this year. But the big question continues to be, well, if such a thing was implemented, how is the state going to pay for it? Do you think that it's any more likely that the legislature is going to embrace that this year than they did last?
The short answer is no. But I think the governor and the state of Illinois and the legislature deserves credit for creating and proposing a bold plan. And it's really the governor is, along with, you know, states like Massachusetts, which actually has implemented a wide-ranging plan, California, which is proposing them. Some of the states and the governors are the motors of change in this regard, and Governor Blagojevich's plan really is a far-ranging, bold plan to cover everybody in Illinois. And it has the usual elements that the presidential candidates are talking about now, expanding Medicaid or the public health insurance to single adults who are poor, for example, covering all families with children, not just the children, but the parents of those children in low-income families, and creating a public insurance that people can buy into with a subsidy. So in terms of expanding insurance, the governor's plan would be very effective. But as David, as you mentioned, the money in Illinois is already very tight. This would just exacerbate the problem, and I think those in the legislators view this as just not feasible, given the current fiscal state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in California they've rejected the plan for the same reason, actually, in the legislature. So without an effective way to control cost, the governor's plan is probably not going to be make a lot of headway in being implemented.
All right. Well, let's go on here. We'll talk with someone next in Champaign County, line number two. Hello.
Hi. Did either of you gentlemen participate in the healthcare justice forums around the state? I mean, I'm trying to gauge how deep your interest is and whether you're...
I attended a number of the sessions.
I see. Did you find anything interesting there? Because I found them... The whole idea of having this kind of discussion, it seems to have not done much. But then the fact that 70% of, you know, the population in the country, according to multiple surveys, agreed with Harry Truman that we should have a government system as sketched out by the other irate caller. What we have is two Democratic candidates who both have said, well, it's just not politically feasible. 70% apparently doesn't include most of their constituency. You know, the pharmaceutical industry, the healthcare insurers, the people that underwrite all sorts of grants, probably that get into academia as well, but I don't want to make a personal attack out of it. It's sort of structural. What we have on the Republican side is a thinly veiled investment plan, which is what I think the medical savings account system is. You can set aside some of your assets without an escape taxing. It's actually deteriorating the insurance company system as it exists, because it does cherry pick and allow these people to have lower cost things, and that's apparently why we have to have state governments to come in and subsidize people paying this overhead that is unacceptable. Anyway, there's only a couple minutes left. Thank you.
All right. Well, either you can respond any way you like.
I think, you know, my reading is that the governor's plan has incorporated many of the ideas of the Illinois Task Force on Healthcare Justice, and these are very fine ways to expand coverage. I mean, I have no disagreement with the caller. I think there's a lot of good ideas out there. The real problem is cost. There's just no way to pay for them. I mean, the state is already under extreme burden in terms of its healthcare costs, and expanding those costs and spending is the problem.
Yeah, and I think just to go back really to the beginning, one of the first points that Professor Kestner made, that we have to be mindful of, you know, it's not that we're debating or disputing in any way the fact that health insurance and health care are important, but it's just that, you know, if we spend more on it, that necessarily means we're likely to be spending less on something else. So what are we giving up on? And, you know, this is a show here, and now we're talking about health care, but we could, you know, you said that you're going to be talking about other critical issues. You know, there's going to be another show here with you, David, talking about education, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and,
mm-hmm.
and so we're going to talk about educational priorities. And I bet you, you don't have to have a PhD in economics to know that that's going to mostly focus on underfunded educational systems and programs and how we need more funding for it. So, you know, we just have to be mindful of these issues.
All right. Let's talk with someone next in Urbana, and this would be line number three. Hello.
Hi. There's so many points here that one could comment on, but I'd like to make one point, and that was the reference made to the fact, or supposed fact, that costs are being driven by overuse of medical care. I'm a senior citizen. I have not met a single person in my life who loves to go to a doctor and overuses the medical system. Likewise, that the demand for fatty food is being driven by consumers and not by the advertising, raises an issue, because everywhere you see that sales and marketing staff are being paid higher than engineering people who actually create products. So my comment would be that this whole healthcare issue is far too important to be left to economists.
Well, that's something we can all agree on.
Thank you.
All right.
But, you know, David, let me comment. And this is not, again, the Institute and Professor Lasasso and I really try to read the evidence as it exists from all throughout the country. But I would just like to point that caller and everybody to a very interesting study called the Dartmouth Healthcare Atlas. It's a quite amazing study of spending on the elderly, on Medicare. And they do things like look at spending in Miami and look at spending in Minneapolis, and they find that the average spending on the elderly in Miami is five times what it is in Minnesota. And then they look at how long people live, elderly live in Miami and Minnesota, and they find very little difference. They provide a really compelling analysis that, in fact, a lot of spending in healthcare is really not translating into health outcomes. And so there is a large part of spending that is not effective or efficient. But I also agree with the caller that what's driving healthcare costs is the advance of medical science and technology. We're inventing new things to treat, new ways to treat people, and that is very costly and very good at the same time. And that's really the primary driver of continuing healthcare costs.
And I'll just add to that that the excellent points there that Professor Kessner made. DartmouthAtlas.org, where you can go and look at that evidence. The other study that I'll point out, probably one of the largest social experiments ever done in this country, is the RAND Health Insurance Experiment. It was conducted in the 70s and 80s. And what they did was actually randomize families and individuals into different health insurance plans from basically a free plan where everything was covered to a 100% out-of-pocket health insurance plan, basically a high-deductible policy. And what they found was that there were very striking spending differences across that spectrum, but there were no health differences, no significant, meaningful health differences found. That was conducted for people ages 64 and under, basically. So, I mean, there really is a lot of evidence out there. But then again, I would agree with the caller that you don't want to leave these decisions about how to make policy to economists. We're here to just offer our advice from our admittedly dismal vantage point.
We'll get one more caller here. We'll try to squeeze him in. Line number one in Champaign. Hello.
Yes. As economists, I'm surprised that throughout the show, I don't think you've addressed the question of possible increases in supply. One of the things that's peculiar about the medical situation in the United States, and as far as I know, maybe in the world, is that if you don't have the stipulated credentials, you are not allowed to be in the business at all. And it seems to me that that's an unnecessary law. I'm not saying that people should be able to fraudulently say that they have training or experience that they don't have, but I am saying that it ought to be possible for anybody to go into the business of providing medical services who wants to. It's interesting that even in the situations where research has shown that the lay people are better than the medical people, as for example in the use of midwives rather than OBs for taking care of mothers and children, throughout the United States for a long time, the lay people have been harassed and run out of business. And it seems to me that simply this change of allowing more supply in would help things a great deal.
Well, I guess that's something that may be important, but one of the great things that characterize healthcare is uncertainty. Uncertainty about treatment, diagnoses, and the complexity of healthcare. And I don't know how much support there would be for not regulating the level of knowledge or training that someone gets before entering in this complex field. So,
I would just add to that that I think the caller does make a very good point, though. Really, that in many ways, throughout a lot of the 20th century, you could describe the medical field, which I think the caller was alluding to, as kind of a cartelized organization. Where supply was pretty strictly controlled by the American Medical Association. That's loosened a lot in recent decades. But there's certainly, I think, a role for basically less intensive care from less highly trained professionals. That's not to say anybody off the street. But there are these plans being implemented, mini medical centers, that are. That can offer very timely care at a convenient location, and are staffed by licensed nurse practitioners or RNs, and where you don't necessarily need somebody from Harvard Medical to take care of a splinter or something of that sort. So there are options in that realm, I think, that are being looked at.
And I guess just one quick point, if we have time, David, is that competition has been shown to be very effective. And in Illinois, we have a remnant of a very anti-competitive regulatory mechanism, Certificate of Need Board, that if a hospital wants to build a new wing or go enter a new area, it has to get government approval to build such a facility. That seems anti-competitive and doesn't allow new entry of supply in along the lines that the caller has alluded to. And again, the evidence is very clear that more competition among hospitals, among providers, is very beneficial to the consumer.
Yeah. We will have to leave it at that with our thanks to our guest, Robert Kestner. He's professor of economics at U of I Chicago. Professor Kestner, thank you.
Thank you.
And Anthony Lasasso, he's associate professor, senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the U of I Chicago. And Professor Lasasso, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.